welcome to The Squeal, PIC Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Swine herd nutrition is the big ticket item on every operation, and today we're looking at access to that nutrition, issues that may be limiting health and profitability. Our special guest today is Ben Harborough, Director of Feed and Nutrition at Iowa Select Farms, PIC's Ilya Zupsov, tech support for Ukraine, Russia, and parts of Asia, Nat Stass on the Wean to Finish Technical Services team, along with nutritionist Wayne Cast. This is part one of a three-part nutrition access series as we discuss feed mills, ingredients, and pelleting.
Ben Harborough, Director of Feed and Nutrition at Iowa Select Farms. I oversee all of our toll mill relationships throughout Iowa, a couple in Minnesota and one in Nebraska. Oversee all the formulation, ingredient purchasing, feed ordering, and internal research that we do here as a company.
My name is Ilya Zupsov, and I'm from Russia, and I'm with technical support for the Russian customers, our Ukrainian customers, Kazakhstan, and, you know, some support for Asia, helping in China and Philippines primarily. And my area of competence is wean to finish. And I also do some benchmarking for Asia, Europe.
My name is Nat Stass. As Ilya referred to, I'm on the wean to finish technical service team and just predominantly work oftentimes with customers at various levels, be that SLAT level or middle or upper management, on just kind of creating recommendations and overall increasing productivity and profitability for our customers out there.
Wayne Cast and I help PIC with some of their nutrition programs, working with their customers, and yep, that's what I do.
Here's the conversation today. The basis is we have spent a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of brain power designing the perfect nutritional program. And once the feed, once the program arrives at the feed mill, issues arise. And I think that the folks who are listening are really going to find value in this, because these are situations, these are symptoms which can arise at every farm, everywhere, anytime. Okay. Or is it when it's delivered, when the products come to the feed mill?
I think it's when it's delivered to the farm, right?
Both are right in that Ben has feed mills that give him less aggravation than other feed mills. You know, and this feed mill's grind may flow better than another. And those are some of the things we'll get to. But it's both places, I would say, at the feed mill and at the farm.
And I would say there's stuff that feed mills can do from, you know, knowledge of ingredients coming in and how they should handle that ultimately can influence what their finished product is.
Based on what you said, Ben, how critical is it that you own the feed mill so that you've hired the right person who has the knowledge to make those determinations?
Well, I think that in anything, you know, whether it's an employee or a contract, you know, caretaker, or, you know, ultimately it comes down to setting your expectations, right? And having a clear understanding of what those are and communicate those effectively to somebody, whether you're buying, you know, feed from them or you're hiring them to take care of, you know, pigs or having them, you know, breed sows, or you're buying genetics from them, having clear expectations of what you desire is critical.
At that end of the feed delivery process, what are the top five concerns for you guys?
You know, at least from where I stand, you know, once that feed gets to that farm, I think just flowability within the pen and the feed line. You know, whether you're using a meal type of diet or a pellet, and it's, you know, Ben can probably speak a lot to that as far as, you know, it kind of sometimes boils down to the nutrients that you're using or the ingredients that you're using ultimately. And then, you know, climate conditions can affect various things, you know, whether it's you're in a high humidity environment or it's cooler and drier out, you know, if it's raining, et cetera. So I don't know if you have any comments on that, Ben, but it'd be great to get your input on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, a number of things that ultimately, you know, can influence feed flow or feed availability to the pig, him ultimately being able to get access to the feed, right? And different ingredients that you're using can on their own be fine, together can cause issues. And then there's ingredients that on their own maybe don't flow the best, but when, you know, mixed in a complete feed can, at times improve overall feed flow. You know, one of those would be distiller's grains, and in our opinion, you know, at certain concentrations can help the overall flowability of finished feed. I think that part of that has to do with typically their particle size is pretty uniform, so there's not a big standard deviation in particle size with a lot of distiller sources, as well as that they're relatively dry. I mean, if you compare it to like corn or something. So you've got a product that historically would run, you know, 10-11% moisture versus corn that could be, you know, 13-15.5% moisture. When you mix those together, can actually end up improving flowability through, you know, most feed systems and bin systems. But, you know, distillers on their own can, you know, have a pretty good reputation of not flowing out of rail cars, not flowing out of hopper bottoms, you know, when delivered to some of these feed mills. And that's because some bulk density, just characteristics of some of the oil that's on them and some of those things that they decide to pack together pretty hard.
Yeah, so that was something I learned from you, Ben, was, you know, when you had to take distillers out of your last ration and it actually made your flow poorer. And that was a surprise to me, and maybe even the first couple times you saw it, a surprise to you. But that was the truth. That's what happened. And the other thing everybody focuses is on the particle size, you know. And you got two mils, and they could have the same average micron, but they flow really different. And Ben, you've taught me some rules of thumb on what you try to shoot for there, as far as, you know, we look at the standard deviation, of course, but you go beyond that and you look at that number 16 screen. Tell them that story about the 16 screen and above and the 100 and below.
Yeah, I really try to focus on making it simple for guys at the mill, right? And so instead of focusing on an average and a standard deviation, try to say, okay, let's focus on no more than 10% on the number 16 pan and above. And then on the bottom end side, you know, really try to minimize on corn that's going to be ground for, you know, for meal diets, for flowability, that if we can get, you know, below 20%, that ends up on the number 100 screen and below. And that's with the flow agent that they use to do a particle size analysis. You know, and it becomes hard for the mills. And I think that, you know, there's different factors that the same guy running two different roller mills at two different locations can have different results. And it's how the roller, you know, corn hits the roller mill. It's how the corn's condition coming to that roller mill. You know, how's it coming out of the, you know, the bin or the silo? You know, I think temperature plays a role in that. And, you know, moisture of that grain plays a role in that. FM or fines that are coming through, or cracks in those kernels hitting that roller mill, can have an influence on what ultimately they can do from a standard deviation or that percentage of particles that fall below that 100 pan. And that really can influence how feed flows, because it can compact, because you got these combinations of big and small particles that, you know, kind of end up like crushed rock, not like pea gravel.
It's good insight. Thank you. DDG is something we've learned about over the last 15, 20 years. Didn't have access to it necessarily before. Ilya,
yes.
Your experience on similar types of products that you've had to learn about as you've dealt with the availability of those products.
Well, you know, you mean the raw material that we use for the for the feed in Russia?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we don't have the DDGs that you guys have here, and we mainly use wheat, barley, some corn, and, you know, soybean meal, for example. So that would be like the standard. But if you think of that, now Russia is African swine fever positive.
Yeah.
It's a requirement to pellet your feed.
Oh.
So I would say that up to 90% of all the feed in Russia is pelleted. Okay, and to the point, you know, to have the feed mill or not to have the feed mill, right now all the integrators and, well, big integrators in Russia, let's say top 20, even top maybe 25, all of them will have their own feed mills. And again, this comes back to the reason, you know, related to African swine fever. I mean, everybody wants to control everything, okay?
So ASF, will that affect our ration delivery?
It's not about the delivery per se, it's about the biosecurity at the feed mill level, and then the biosecurity during the transportation, so, and then of course at the farm. But you know what I mean is, you have to be able to control the whole process yourself, not relying on others, okay? So you can be sure that, you know, you don't bring the virus.
Not so much
to your
today,
system.
But since it used to be, you know, the guy would haul corn to town in his truck, and it was the same truck he hauled his hogs to town with. So that. But now everybody's got semis, so that's not such a big deal. But that sure used to be an issue. But yeah,
the pelleted method. I don't want to go too far into that, but. We've used them, we've not used them. What's the business model now? Do we, or does it just depend?
So, I mean, I think from my perspective, and I'd like definitely a nutritionist perspective from this as well, because they're probably more knowledgeable in it from a performance standpoint than I am. But, you know, I think it ultimately depends on cost of ingredient and then the cost of pellet. And at what level does corn, at what price does corn have to be to justify the pellet to get a better feed efficiency, essentially. But then you got to kind of also tie into, you know, what your pellet quality is. And so if you're going to run 40 or 50% fines, you know, is it even justified to pellet or to even go through that process of pelleting? And then the other thing on the back end of that is transport. You could transport a lot more pelleted feed versus mash feed, if I'm correct in that saying that too. So
more dense.
Yeah, it's denser. So. But yeah, I would definitely like a nutritionist perspective on that as far as, you know, what price ingredient do we need to be at to justify pelleting, and then what's a good target, realistic target for like fines and such.
Your big advantage to pelleting is it allows you to grind your grain as fine as you desire and it still flow. I think that's the
yes.
biggest advantage of pelleting. And it also will allow you to use ingredients that don't flow very well, and it makes it flowable. You know, the research would say that if you get to 20 or 30% fines, you're giving up the feed efficiency response of pelleting, but you're not giving up the grind response to pelleting. So it becomes kind of an economic. You hit the nail on the head. It's an economic decision. What's it cost me to pellet compared to what my expected feed savings is? And then the wild card in pelleting is if you think it has an effect on mortality. Gene Gourley did a trial, the same genetics, the same barn, pellet versus mash, two different seasons of the year. And the season of the year when the flu went through there, it had a big effect on his mortality. And the season when he didn't have the flu, it had no effect on mortality. Steve Kitt did a trial, and so he looked at pellets versus mash in the research barn, and there's very little difference in mortality there. But then when he did it in the field, he put 20 barns on pellets and 20 barns on mash, and then that difference that he saw was much bigger because the management level wasn't the same. So I think it's a fairly straightforward calculation on the feed efficiency and whether it'll pay for the pelleting, but that mortality aspect of it, I think is a harder number to come up with, and it may be different seasons of the year. So Ben, you've looked at pellets versus not, and I think you've chosen to spend your time focusing on getting your grind right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, right, it becomes relative to what you believe you can grind your corn to without having to pellet. You know, I think there's been situations that some people, you know, might have said, well, we're pelleting, so we're gonna improve feed conversion, and, you know, completely forgot about the grind size needs to be, you know, acceptable going into a pellet as well, that it doesn't overcome that step. And I would say that, you know, on a corn, soy, and especially a corn, soy distiller type diet, the ability to have, you know, much throughput through a pellet mill and still get adequate, meaning, you know, less than 20 or 15% fines, is really hard. You know, really hard for even the best operators to be able to manage that and have much throughput at all, which all gets back to that cost equation on how much are you really going to spend to have, you know, a pellet that, you know, best case scenario might have, you know, 20, 30% fines with it. And I think that, you know, that variability of pelleting becomes the biggest issue because it can impact, you know, nutrient availability or feed availability, because if you got a really good set pellet, right, so you get this load of feed in and let's say it's only 10% fines and the guy set his feeders just right to manage feed wastage on a 10% fine, and then the next load comes in and it's 40% fines and all those fines are flowing through the feeder and the pig's sorting and pushing them into the pit out of the feeder can influence that feed efficiency as well. So I think, you know, no doubt pelleting is going to improve flowability, but there's still the cat, you know, piece of does the pig actually end up consuming that feed or not because of different situations, and really comes back to that variability on what gets delivered to the farm. Is it consistent day in and day out?
So I've heard this here, Ilya, that producers say, I don't care if you give me good pellets or bad pellets, I just want them the same every week. Do you hear that in Russia
yes.
too? Yeah,
absolutely.
That's universal language. Yeah.
Yes, yes, but you know, the reality is that the farm will never get the perfect perfect pellet.
Right.
And the main reason in Russia is that, you know, the feed mills will run at 100 plus percent of their capacity.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because of the sow productivity goes up, we have more pigs going through our nurseries and finishes, and, you know, we built those feed mills 10, 15 years ago and designed them for one amount of system, but, you know, now we have just more pigs. So, yes, I completely agree with everything that's been said about the feeder adjustment, because it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Right? And, it's and you know, when we receive pelleted feed with low quality of pellets, right? Pellet quality. I mean, you can see the adjustments of different feeders differently.
Right, and then there's some feeders that are more friendly to crummy
yes.
pellets, like those round feeders with
yeah,
that real
yep,
deep
yep,
bowl.
Yep.
And so hell, those fines, and they can't push the fines in the corner there, you know.
Yeah,
they just, and they can't get them out because the bowl's so deep. And I think some of our wet dry feeders with the ledge, they don't care much. They don't.
Not really. Yeah,
they
work just fine.
Indifferent to pellet quality, but you're what we think of as a dry feeder can be kind of sensitive.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point, because we actually, you know, PIC created a feeder adjustment poster both for dry and wet dry, and we used mash feed and pellet feed, and we actually discovered that, you know, because a pellet's denser, that, you know, your percentages, you may say that your percentages are similar, but 35% of a pellet feed and 35% of a mash feed are two different supplements of feed in that pan.
To which is more, I don't know.
So the pellet would be more.
More. And especially, 35% pellets
yeah, and
is like 50%
mash. Especially in like a wet dry situation where that pellet's going to come down and it's going to break down in that water. You know, you may think you're at 35%, but when that pellet then breaks down, you may gain an extra 5, 10, or 15% on top of that when that pellet starts to spread out as well. But that's a really interesting thing as far as that pan coverage and where you recommend, but mm-hmm. it gets real difficult as the fines can be highly variable between loads.
Joining us on The Squeal today was Ben Harborough with Iowa Select Farms, PIC's Nat Stass, and Ilya Zupsov with Wayne Cast. You're welcome to share this program widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.